Hello, welcome to Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast.
I'm Jake.
And I'm Sherry.
This podcast is for all photographers interested in film, digital, and the gear that goes with the craft of photography.
It doesn't matter what camera you're shooting, but be warned, we focus heavily on analog.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to today's show. I'm going to start off by saying, excuse me, I have a cold. So hopefully my sneezing and runny nose and coughing will hold off during the show. Our guest tonight is Bob St. Cyr. Hi, Bob. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Thank you for having me, Sherry and Jake. It's a pleasure to be here. And a little about myself. I guess I started, got interested in photography back in about the time I started junior high school. So about 13 years of age. And at that time, we had a tiny little camera and used that. And I think at that time, I spent maybe more time in the darkroom and learning about that process than I did with a camera. And then I just kept the interest up and kept going with it. And here I am today.
Cool.
Two little different cameras and still enjoy the darkroom when I can.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the different formats that you shoot? I know you have just a little bit of everything in your toolkit.
Yeah, different tools for different things. I just enjoy photography in general. So, you know, I started out with 35, a small 35. I think we had at the school at that time was a little Ricoh 500G. And it's kind of, I kind of shake my head now when I think about how that little thing intimidated me at first, you know, when I started. And now it's just a very simple tool to use. And so I moved on from 35, and then I went up to medium format. I got into that and did that for a little while. And then from there, I branched up into a large format. So I've been shooting a little bit of 35, a little bit more lately, but kind of wanes and comes back. But mostly, primarily, I like to shoot in medium and large format. And so that's kind of what I do. And then I work a little bit with alternative processes. So I've had a chance to do a little bit of platinum palladium printing and also working with cyanotype and also lumen printing.
Cool.
Exciting stuff.
So what about, I know you also have some pinhole in there.
That's correct. Yeah, I have a variety of pinhole cameras. Actually, I just received my latest pinhole. I had a guest speaker on my podcast, I think, last year, and then found out that he was into pinhole photography and specifically stereographic photography. And so he made a stereographic pinhole camera, and I was able to get one of those and try it out. And it's pretty cool. I got the viewer as well. And so what it does is it takes two slightly different images of the same subject, but the register is slightly different for each image. And when you reverse those images and combine them into a special holder and then put them in a viewer, it gives it a 3D appearance. So it's like you can almost reach out and touch it. It's really neat seeing how that
would be
out.
Cool.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, and so I've done that. I've worked with that a little bit, experimented with that in black and white and with some color slide film. And it's just, especially with detail, like if you're looking at something like trees and leaves and branches, it really brings out the detail, gives it that 3D look. So it's quite interesting to work with that. And some of the other cameras have been pinhole blender. I've worked with some of those. And that camera, what it does is it blends the image. So it kind of curves the film around inside the camera, and there are three pinholes. And so you can open each of those pinholes and it will blend an image. It makes a long, like a panoramic image, and it blends the image and it creates a really neat effect. And that's one of the things I guess I liked about the pinhole imaging is that it's kind of like the way I describe it is it's like you can meld or mend bend light. You know, you can work with light and bend it with a pinhole camera because you're not shooting on a straight plane. So I kind of like that idea of being a, you know, one of those creative outlets with photography. And I guess that's what I really enjoy is the different creative outlets, the different ways you can release your creativity through photography. So that's a little bit about that.
What would you say would be the first thing that someone getting into pinhole should do? Besides get the camera, of course, but what are the first tips to being successful at pinhole?
Patience. You need to have patience because it is a bit of an experimental process at the start, because you can't, well, you can rely on a handheld light meter, but most pinhole cameras don't have, a viewing frame for you to focus through. Like with a regular camera, you look through the viewfinder and you get a pretty good idea of what you're going to see. And with most pinhole cameras, it isn't like that. You just have to kind of square up this scene you want to photograph and then point the camera in that direction. So you need to have some patience in knowing what coverage your camera has. And you may know that. It may be like 40 millimeter. It may be a 20 millimeter. You know, even knowing that is fine. But seeing that is a totally different thing. And then your exposures, because you're working with apertures, say in the range of f200 or f256 or f150, you know, your exposure times are going to be a lot longer too, depending on the speed of the film you're using. So you might be making exposures that are maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 1 minute, 8 minutes. It really, really depends. So there's going to be a level of patience that's going to be needed while you're experimenting with all these things. I would also recommend, you know, talking to someone or befriending someone who is experienced in pinhole photography so that they can help you along with that and maybe give you some pointers and help you troubleshoot and give you feedback and, you know, something like that might be useful, be helpful. So.
For sure. I guess that's a great use for the film photography community on Facebook. Lots of different photography groups, I'm sure, that are centered around pinhole.
Yeah, there's a few, and you see people posting information, and you know, you could always pose questions and things like that and get some feedback. And also you can see what people have done, and they might have given some feedback on that as well. So that also can be very helpful. Just to read what other people have done and go on and have a look and maybe, you know, follow some people that do pinhole photography that kind of resonates with you and the work you're doing, and to get a feel for that as well. But it all starts with a camera. So you've got two options. You can build your own pinhole camera, and that's perfectly fine. And or you could buy a commercially available one. And that's the two options that you have available to you. It depends on how comfortable you feel, you know, making your own camera versus buying your own. So, and it's going to be important to know the focal length of your camera and the aperture, like the pinhole, what size is the pinhole? Like, is it an F150 or an F200? That'll also be important information to help you with your calculating of exposure.
So, Bob, I'm going to ask possibly a silly question as somebody who absolutely has no clue about pinhole. So let's say you were building your own camera. How would you go about determining, I guess, the f-stop of your pinhole?
Well, there is an equation, mathematical equation for that.
Okay.
I usually tell people, don't relax. You can do this online. There is a website. You can go to Pinhole Calculator and put in your data, and it will give you the numbers you're looking for. So there are websites where you can get that information, or you can you know, do it the old-fashioned way with pen and paper. I think some people rely on what's called the Rayleigh equation, and I don't have that off the top of my head, but I could look it up. But it's just as easy to go online and look for a website on Pinhole Calculator and then get that information that way.
Okay.
One of the other things too is that you don't want to be, you know, you may not want to be too like technical engineering serious about this. You might want to do it just for the pure fun of it. So you might want to take, say you have an old body you want to use, an old 35 millimeter body, And you might want to tape some aluminium foil onto it and just make a tiny pinhole and then put a roll of film and just experiment and try that. So it can be as simple as that, or it can be as complicated as you want it to be. So you know, it's got that whole scale from simplicity to more mathematical complexity. It has that whole range. So you could pick a spot where you feel comfortable.
Right. Okay. So another thing is, you mentioned you also really enjoy the large format. What is it that draws you to that?
Well, I like working with the bigger negatives. Like, it's really nice pulling them out of the development tank and seeing that nice big negative and all that detail. I like the rich, sharp detail that I get from large format. I've had a chance a couple of times to work with 8x10 as well. I work with a 4x5, but working with 8x10 and lifting up that negative, and that's the sheet of a regular, you know, piece of printing paper, and that's the size of the negative. It's just, how to describe it? It's just a beautiful thing to behold. it's really, really nice. Like, I love the detail you get from large format. I love the color fidelity you get from transparencies with that as well. And I also like, you know, it slows you down. I know people talk about that, the process. And for me, photography is a therapeutic process. And I find that really comes through when I'm working in large format. I like being challenged, you know, by the scene, by what I'm doing, rather than just going and pushing buttons and getting something. I like to be able to, you know, have a little bit of more creative control in how I compose that and where I put my horizon line. Or if I'm photographing buildings, you know, I can straighten out those lines, you know, by using my movements. You know, it also is about choice of lens and f-stop and aperture, and did I close the lens before I pull the film holder, you know, and all these different things you have to remember. Yes, it may be intimidating at first, but I think if it's really something that resonates with you, you just learn these things and they become part of your routine as you go through working with the large format. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's hard to quantify. It's just, I like the challenges that it offers. Maybe the fact that it's not easy. I don't know, maybe that sounds weird, but it's just, I appreciate the format. I appreciate the quality I get out of it. And I appreciate that it slows me down. And it's, I like working with the equipment and the scene.
I don't think that sounds weird at all. I think you enjoy the challenge of it.
That's it, right? Again, it's the slowing down. It's the therapeutic nature of it. It's the, getting that image and making sure you do all these things, right? Like, you've got to, you know, before you put the film holder in, you've got to focus on the screen, but you have to open the lens to do that and open it to its widest aperture. And then when you've got it focused and you have your lines where you want them, then, you know, closing the lens and, you know, shutting down the aperture and, you know, make all these things you have to do, right? And remembering to do all these things. And I've made mistakes. But you learn from that. And I think it keeps your brain active. It keeps your brain working. And I find as I get older, that's something that's going to become more and more important. Yeah. Keep that old brain working, you know?
Well, Jake wouldn't know about that yet. No.
Not over the hill yet, but I'm getting there.
No, I mean, I think I've read a book on that, and I've also heard some studies recently about, you know, keeping our brain active, keeping our brain working, can be beneficial to us as we go forward and as we age. So, anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Bob, is it fair to say that you generally focus on landscapes when it comes to your own photography?
Yes, I think so. I really enjoy the challenges of getting out there and being in the land, being in the different areas that I can be in, whether it's in the prairies or whether it's overseas or whether it's here in BC. It's just, I like to be out and hiking. I like the fresh air and I do like the challenges of working with scenery and the lighting that I'm presented with. I can't control that. So I have to work with what I've got, right?
Yeah.
I really enjoy that, you know. So yeah, that's that would pretty much sum up me. I really, really like that, the landscape work.
You definitely cannot control the lighting you're given. I agree.
Yeah. So it's a challenge, right? You know, we've got to balance the tools we use, the films we use, depending on the ISO, or do we want color, do we want black and white? All these factors have to be keyed into it. And I think that's part of what makes film photography attractive for me, is that there is these process that you have to go through.
Have you ever tried light painting?
Oh, I've heard of that. No, I don't think I have. No, that sounds like an interesting thing to try, though.
It's a ton of fun, and that's one way you can control your light.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a good.
You just get a cheap flashlight and off you go.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
I haven't done any of that since, oh God, it's probably been several years now, but I've done that especially for like night photography with long exposures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's say you're doing like a night landscape and there's some stuff in the foreground that you maybe want to highlight. Like, let's say there's an old rusted out car.
Uh-huh.
So you, during your long exposure, like while your shutter is open, you can just take that flashlight and kind of literally like just, I guess, paint in the light with your flashlight where you want, I guess, exposed on your sensor or, I guess, film. But yeah, it's a neat technique.
And you can also take it and put it inside an old building and it looks like the lights are on inside.
That reminds me, I've seen somebody do stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I've seen that old buildings people go in, or you can pop a flash and put a filter on it and then you can get those different colors. Yeah.
Okay. I just use an old flashlight that's got yellowish tint to it.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like an old incandescent bulb.
Yeah, that's a great
on
idea.
Inside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really neat things that people do with light painting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to explore that for a project in the future.
Next time you get a nice dark sunset and you have an old building, you'll throw your flashlight in there and you can shoot the sunset and have your building lit up.
Very nice. Very good idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that you teach photography, Bob. Can you share some of your experiences teaching?
Sure. It's what I love to do. I mean, it's perfect when I can combine my background in education with experiences and background in photography and put them together. So I've really enjoyed that when I've had a chance to teach photography. It's not something I can do full time or all the time, but I have done it and really have enjoyed it. Working with students, I find is seeing the enthusiasm for photography, I think, is a really, really satisfying feeling when you see that there's that interest in other people. That's great. You know, when you can pass on an interest in film is a great thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know you sent me a couple rolls of film a little while ago now. I've shot the Kentmere,
uh-huh.
But I haven't shot Time in Tin yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm sitting there, I'm not sure. I can't find anything about it. I'm not sure exactly where to shoot it at.
Okay. I should. I don't have any more of that. It was, I think I had gotten that film or learned about it from a former student of mine. I believe it comes from China, but I don't know. Like, I know there's two films there. There's Lucky and Shanghai. They make a Shanghai film, and I don't know which one that would be.
Yeah.
So, because it doesn't have any rebate. It doesn't have any writing on the rebate on the edge of it. It's just clear. So I thought, okay, I mean, I like to try films from time to time, different films. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm working with, for the Frugal Film, I'm working with some old Pentatomic X I found. And then I had some old Fuji duplicating film I've been working through. So it's just all these different films. I like to try them out. And that was one of them. The Time in 10 was one of them. But I think I only had a few rolls of that, and I finished that up a while ago.
I know. I need to shoot it, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm waiting for just the right thing. I should just quit waiting. Just go shoot the thing.
Just try that. What did you think of the Kentmere?
I actually like Kentmere.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that I the... Like
I have sorry. The... I had the 100 that uh-huh. Bob sent me. I liked that one. And then last year for Frugal, the first 6 months, I used the 400. And I didn't mind it either.
Okay.
But I did push it to 800.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah.
Being it's so dark and gloomy here all the time in the winter. Come summertime, I actually put it back down to 400. And I liked it a lot better at 800.
Do you have crocuses there?
If I can find them.
Okay. I mean,
they're
that's
getting
a good
hard
sign.
To find.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I love to look for crocuses, you know, or daffodils, and that tells me that spring is around the corner, you know.
Yeah.
Love to see those.
But a lot of them, road construction has ripped them out when they made the roads wider and.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So, uh-huh. Yeah, they're getting harder to find.
Oh, that's too bad.
We don't get daffodils here, though.
No daffodils. I guess,
yeah,
no.
That's.
Unless you plant them yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's. You have that more in the West Coast, I guess.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Bob, is there anything interesting that you've tried for the first time recently, be it like a new film stock, a developer, maybe a different printing process?
Well, last week I was printing with some old Ilford paper, and it's called Rayon paper.
Rayon, okay.
Several years ago I had gotten some. I think someone in Toronto had some, and I purchased it from him, but just in small 5x7. And I saw a chance to get some rayon and velvet stipple and velvet luster, I think it is, and 8x10. And I thought, ooh, I'm going to jump on that. And I got that, but they're only 10 sheet packages. I didn't realize Ilford made less than 25 sheet packages. I guess it's that old. But so I printed with that. I kind of like the rayon finish. It's kind of neat when you rub your finger on it. It kind of has a zzz sound to it.
No.
It's kind of different, you know, kind of different because most of them are either glossy or matte, semi-matte today, right? And to find something like that rayon, kind of like, I don't know how to describe it.
Would it kinda be like the old, remember those black velvet posters we used to color as kids? With
or
the texture?
You used to get those old color pictures and they had rounded corners on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that paper, if you rub your finger on it, it makes a zzz type of sound. It's like there's raised little dots on it, kind of. It's not a smooth paper.
Okay.
I don't know how else to describe it. It's called a rayon finish. So, and I love working with that. I mean, I get, you know, if I can find old negatives or old films in a thrift store, I just love that because I want to be able to try printing that. I'd love to try printing negatives that are really old, you know, to have that chance to try them on new materials and see how they react. A few years ago, I was able to find some old negatives at a thrift store and printed some of them, and they were from probably the mid-50s, the Canadian Navy, mid-50s. And I was just amazed at the quality of when I got the prints and looking at the detail. They must have had the best stuff. The Navy must have had the best stuff.
As far as
cameras and lenses and stuff go, because when I looked at these prints from these negatives, they were really, really detailed. Really, they must have done really well lit, very well lit, well detailed. So kudos to the Canadian Navy Photographic Unit. They really know their stuff.
I bought some old slides in the thrift shop, and I'm guessing they're late 60s, early 70s. Uh-huh. And they're Kodachrome and they're Fujichrome. And the Kodachrome ones are bright and no degradation whatsoever. And the Fujichromes are all magenta. Yeah. And they're all in the same package. So they've been stored exactly the same.
Yeah.
What a yeah. shame.
Yeah, that was quite a film. Like, I think about the technology they had in film technology. It was incredible. Like, mm-hmm. films like Verichrome Pan, like, man, that stuff has a, it's very, very forgiving. At least from my little experiment with it, I got a chance to shoot some of that a few years ago. And I was really impressed with that. And right now I'm working with an old bulk roll of Panatomic X that looked like it was processed before September 1988. So, and I'm just really impressed with that stuff as well.
I've got a couple rolls of Verichrome Pan dated 1969 that are in 126 format that I plan on shooting.
Oh, I'd be
interesting.
Yeah. Be great to see your results, and I use a I use an HC110 developer, which I understand is good for fogging, like for old films. If they get some fogging, I understand the HC110 is quite a good developer to use for films that might suffer from that. So,
well, that's good because I have two choices, HC110 and Blaisnell.
Yeah, Blaisnell, probably that would be a stand development thing. If you were using that one, I think, eh?
Yeah.
Which
I need to try again. And I haven't.
Yeah. But I know you're primarily a color photographer, right?
I am.
Yeah.
HC110, I've got the old Serpy stuff. It's going to last me forever.
Oh, and that's a beautiful thing about it. And the Blaisnell is it doesn't go bad very quickly. And that's one of the nice things about it as well, I find. Like I shot a little bit of technical pan a few years ago. Someone had asked me to do some copy work for them. They didn't have the negative. They just had the image. And so I had some technical pan and I used that. And I made from a 35mm technical pan copy of a print. I was able to make a 16x20 and it just looks incredible. I was just flabbergasted. Because this kind of technology existed? I mean, you guys made film like this? Wow.
I have a question for you. In a box of stuff I got, there is a package of, I believe it's Dectol, mm-hmm. and it's powder.
Yeah.
And it's very well expired, but it's in the poly package, so it's not the old can stuff or anything like that. Uh-huh. Would that still be good to use?
As long as it's been kept dry and cool, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, I put it down here in my basement and it's dark and it's cool. So.
Yeah, as long as it's not wet, you know, mm-hmm. I don't see a problem with that, with the powder. Okay. I use a liquid. I use a multigrade, but I do know some people who use Dectol. And I can also ask people in my darkroom group and I can get back to you with that as well. Find out.
Yeah. It was one of these things that it was just kind of thrown in the box. And I thought, well, I know it's not a negative developer.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's for paper. And
yeah, paper.
I haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, you know, you'll find out, too, if you mix it up and you'll notice it as well. If it's not working, you'll notice it right away. But right. I can also check on that and get back to you as well, just to find out, because we might have some people in the darkroom group that might have stuff that's in a similar situation. So
do you think we covered everything? Is there anything else that we should ask, or should we take a break here?
Yeah, I think I got everything covered that I need to.
All right, anything you wanted to add in, Bob?
Just that I hope I'm not monopolizing the conversation, you guys.
You're the guest, Bob. Yeah.
Yeah, you're the guest. All right. We will be right back. back after a short message, and I need to go blow my nose.
Hey folks, hope you've been enjoying the show. Your support has been downright amazing over the years, so thank you so much. If you would like to help support the show, you can buy us a cup of coffee over on Ko-Fi. That is ko-fi.com/embracethegrainpodcast. That's ko-fi.com/embracethegrainpodcast. Thank you. Back to the show. It's that time. It's time to press that button.
Hello. Your call cannot be taken at the moment, so please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Sherry and Jake. Billy Sanford here. Hope you're both doing well. Thought I would call in as a first-time participant of the Frugal Film Project with thoughts as we wrap up the first month. I think the setup this year of one camera, one film plays to sort of the way that I'm wired. And so I appreciate that we're going to get to use the same combo throughout the year and try and learn how to get the most out of it. So as a refresher, I'm using the Kodak 66. It's a medium format folder. I have been shooting a lot more medium format over the last year and really enjoy it. That sweet spot between having a bigger negative and fewer exposures to finish off a roll is nice. And I think, you know, especially for beginners who would be looking to get into medium format, I wasn't sure what options on the budget end existed. You know, you hear about Hasselblads and Rolleiflexes and Mamiyas at one end, and then of course there's Holgas, and there are some pinhole options on the cheaper end of the cost spectrum, but I really didn't know what options existed sort of between those, so I was really glad to find this camera. And a lot of other folders out there as well, some of them a little bit more costly. But anyway, I had considered the Holga, but did want to see if there was anything out there, medium format, that would offer you at least a little bit more control. So was really grateful to find this Kodak 66. And, you know, when it is folded up, it is pocketable. I mean, it will fit in one of my large jacket pockets, so certainly a lot lighter to carry around than the Hasselblad, so that's nice also. And I'm shooting FOMA 100, certainly one of the more affordable options in a black and white film. I have traditionally been more of a 400 speed shooter, and considering that the project goes the whole year, maybe 400 would have been the way to go, since, you know, there's a lot of latitude there. But I did go with the 100 just to, again, you know, to stretch and get more used to working in that situation. I know a few other people had some other side aspects of the project. You know, maybe they're going to have some themes just for themselves going during the project, that sort of thing. For me, I think one of the things that I wanted to do was to be able to pick my four favorites every month and print them in the darkroom. So what I do with my other prints that I make, just, you know, when I'm playing around, is store them in these portfolios, and they hold 48 prints. So if I pick my four favorite every month over the year, then at the end of the year, I'll have my 48 favorite images from the Frugal Film Project. So it's the printing, you know, that gives me an excuse to print, which is nice. Not that I need an excuse, but it's good. That will give me a reason to be in there printing. And also the other part of this is to is that process of going through and picking my four favorites, because it's easy enough to say, yes, I like this picture, or no, I don't like this one, but trying to quantify that and sort of rank your images. I mean, I've never been good at curating mine anyway. So yeah, that's sort of first impressions, you know, January, first month, new camera, new film, just trying to put it through its paces, find out, you know, what it's the strengths of that combination, plus my style, how they mesh together and what works for me and what could use some improvement, maybe. So it was a good month. I made it out to a railroad museum and to Old Car City, which is sort of a half junkyard, half art installation. And then just traveled around some back roads close to home. I think I captured, you know, a good representation of the sorts of things that I typically photograph. So would be interested, certainly, to hear from other people participating in the Frugal Film Project about any, you know, how their experience in this first month was, and any sort of side goals or themes or projects they have for themselves while working in the project. So would encourage anybody else to call in with their perspectives as well. And since we are still early in February as I record this, just a reminder to anybody also who would like to participate in our Music Feeds the Soul album cover recreation contest and maybe get some films and a print from me, or a gift card to B&H or Analog Wonderland, to get those submissions in by the end of February. And have really enjoyed seeing what everyone's come up with so far, and hope to see some more. Hope y'all are well, and take care. Bye.
And we are back. So thank you so much, Billy, for calling in. Yes, please do. If you have any thoughts on the Frugal Film Project and your first month's experience, do call in and we'll be happy to play them on the air. So I thought maybe in the second half of the show we would do a segment on Frugal, since all three of us are members. The Frugal Film Project, you know, I never would have dreamed this project would have had appeal for, or even last for more than 1 year. You were a member last year, Bob. Can you share your experience about the year and maybe a bit about why you signed up for the second year?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, I found out about it, I think perhaps the first year it was run, was that 2019?
Yes.
Yeah, I had I don't know, I was surfing or I had found it somehow on the internet. I was looking through this and I saw this Frugal Film Project, and I was going through the website and looking at these pictures. And then I noticed there was a member from Canada, and, you know, Sherry Christensen. So, and I started looking into that and found out more about it, and then watched more pictures coming up and seeing what people were doing. And then I decided, yeah, I'm going to try that. And I liked it. I really did. And one of the nice things about the Frugal Film Project is that it does give us, you know, a reason, if you will, to go out and use our gear, use our cameras. I mean, it's easy to say, I'll do it tomorrow, or I'll do it another time. But with Frugal Film, pardon me, you know, each month, you know, we're asked to post pictures from that month. So I found it was a really good way to get out and use some of my gear and experiment with some film. I know last year was half a year in color and half a year in black and white. So it gave me some chance to, opportunity, I should say, to try a different emulsion that I hadn't, I wouldn't have tried otherwise. And also to use some of my gear that might be sitting on the shelf collecting dust. So it was a really good opportunity to do that. I also like the challenge, you know, with Frugal, you know, finding equipment, finding film that is within a certain budget, within a certain range. And I also like that idea as well. So trying to, you know, use this maybe low-tech gear or this film stock that's quite outdated or maybe not so good, and try to compose and come up with something good from this, you know. And I find that's a really nice challenge to have. And then this year it's the same thing, you know. I'm looking forward to each month going out, and what am I going to shoot this month? I've got my emotion picked, but what am I going to do for this month, and what am I going to do for the next month? So I like that that impetus to get out and work with film and work with photography, hone my skills, improve my skills, develop my skills, and also use the gear. So I find that's all really helpful. Again, I think too, it also serves to, as we're shooting, right, we're practicing our craft, and it's making us better photographers. So I think it's a winning situation all around. I hope that's not too long of an answer.
No, there is no such thing. Bob. No such thing as too long of an answer. Jake, what was your opinion of Frugal last year?
Yeah, so last year was my first year, and it went very well, probably the first 6 or 7 months for me. And then I guess as the year drug on, I kind of started struggling a little bit. I know I still haven't posted the last month. Actually, the last couple months, which is terrible, but yeah, I just really, really struggled. But at the same time, it was a fun project. It was nice to have a project to, I guess, focus on, and it was a great time seeing what everyone else was up to and what they were shooting. But yeah, this year I'm just really excited to be able to focus on one film and one camera. And this year I went with medium format, so I'll have less frames to shoot in a month. So I'm hoping that'll get me on the right track. But yeah, it's just a really great project, and kind of a great way to maybe get to know a camera that you might not have otherwise.
So, Bob, what camera are you shooting for Frugal?
I'm using an Olympus OM2000 with a 35 to 70 zoom lens on it.
Okay. And your film?
My film is Panatomic X.
Okay. And Jake, what are you using?
I'm using a Voigtlander Brilliant, which is, if you don't know that one, it's kind of a box camera, I guess, a faux TLR is what you could call it. It's it looks like a twin lens reflex, except the viewfinder isn't, I guess, synced up with the focus. It's zone focus. And I'm using HP5 for a film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I mention one more thing?
You bet. Sure.
I forgot to mention last year, when we had half a year in color and half a year in black and white, it also, you know, pushed me to try processing my work in C41 chemistry, because I usually work, when I do color, it's primarily E6. So okay. The project, the Frugal Film project, also gave me that opportunity to, okay, I'm going to have to get a kit and do this myself. So it was also good in that way, and it gave me the experience. And it's one of those bucket list things. Like, there's lots of them in photography. And, you know, one of them is shooting color infrared film, and another one is processing C41. And so I was able to check that one off there from last year. So thank you for that.
Yeah. C41 is actually really easy.
Yeah, it was. It's yeah. similar to E6. Just the temperature is a little bit different. The timing is a little bit different, but I found it quite similar to E6. But it was an opportunity. It was something I could try, so I was grateful for that.
Right. Well, I came up with the project in 2019. That was the first year, and my experience has been varied. I absolutely adored the first year. I picked one camera and one film, and that was the equation. You just went out and you shot your roll of film and you processed it, and the pictures went up. And The second year, we decided as a group to change the film every quarter, but we still had to pick one camera, but we had four different film stocks to use. And then it was mentioned, like, last year was the third year, and it was 6 months of color and 6 months of black and white. And you could use any camera you wanted. And I actually liked that one the least. There were too many variables, I thought. You could use a different camera every month. And yes, your film was the same for 6 months. But if I wanted to use a different camera every single month all year, I could. And life being what it is, I got behind a couple months in a row, and I had a hard time remembering what camera did I use. Yeah, because, well, my mom had a stroke, and I got behind developing, and harvest happened. Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there, okay, I've used three different cameras, and here's three different rolls of film, and I had to really think, what was I shooting when I took this picture? So that was a lot of the reason I thought, well, let's just go back to the original one film, uh-huh, one camera thing, right, and just take all of that out of the equation. And like you mentioned, Bob, I do think it makes us a better photographer to work with one piece of gear all year.
Yeah.
And previously, we had maintained the project on a website, and let me tell you, that was a lot of work. So we went to the Facebook group, and thank you so much, everybody who joined in there, because that made my life a whole lot easier.
Great, that's good to hear.
Yeah, and it also allowed a lot more people to join in. And if you're thinking of joining and you're listening right now, it's not too late. We no longer have strict deadlines. And we do accept latecomers. Heck, you could even catch up at this point.
Yeah.
You could find us over at the Facebook groups under the Frugal Film Project 22. It's the one with the pink Pentax on the cover. Also, if you are over there, or if you follow the old camera guy, David Mahaly, on any of his YouTube channels or Facebook groups, check out his $5 film in a $2 camera video. That is his January entry for Frugal this year. And it's a pretty awesome video. So definitely, here's a plug for David, the old camera guy, for his video. I guess we have one Facebook question from the group. Jake, did you want to take that away?
Sure. So the Facebook question is from Billy Sanford. He said, just wanted to thank Bob for his participation in the Silver Linings Project, and then ask whether he has been baking any more of Beaumont's bread.
Not lately. No, it's... That was kind of like over the Christmas break when we were snowed in, and it was, you know, one of those can't get out very much, and what am I going to do? Well, I might as well bake bread. And but I do enjoy his book. I mean, I've got the book on the history of photography that he put out, I think, with MoMA, and this other one, Beaumont's Kitchen, and I really like it. I thought, what a great combination is photography and food. I think the two absolutely go together. So. But no, I've got, I'll have to go into that and maybe make a loaf now that he's mentioned that.
So
but it would sure be nice to share it with people. You know, that's the thing, is I really look forward to the time when I can get together with other photographers. And I know other podcasts, you hear about that, like they have a photo walk, or they're doing this or doing that. And you know, that's all put on hold now. So I do look forward to the time when people can get together again. That would be really, really awesome to do, be able to do that.
So, Bob, you'll have to do some photography on food.
Oh, that's a good idea, too. Light painting and food. Okay.
You can photograph your bread that you made and
There
everybody can see it.
There you go. Okay. That's what I'll have to do.
That's an idea.
Tell us a little more about your participation in the Silver Linings Project, just in case nobody knows or knew or heard about it.
Okay. Well, a lot of times when I'm cooking or processing film, I'll be listening to podcasts. And I was listening to Embrace the Green, and then I heard about this Silver Linings. I think you gave them an opportunity, like, was it Mike Kukovica? And you gave them an opportunity to put a plug in for the Silver Linings in your podcast. And then I had contacted you about that, I think. And that's how I found out about it, was through Embrace the Green. So you see, it pays to listen to these podcasts. So, and through that, I contacted, and, you know, I think it was Mike. And then, of course, he checked with the other people, and then they got in touch with me, and voila, I was in. So I really enjoy that. And you know, I like that kind of thing. It really resonates with me, because I remember when I was a student at UVic, University of Victoria, and I belonged to the photography club there. And I remember a couple of times once a semester, we had, we'd print up photographs. Anybody who's a club member could print up photographs, and we would offer them for sale upstairs in the Student Union building. And the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds, would go directly to the food bank. So we could print up pictures, and the Student Union would give us a table, and we could set up and display our images, and people coming and going, whether they're professors or students, could walk by and have a look at the images and make a donation, and then that money would go to there. So that's what the Silver Linings Project reminded me of, you know, doing our photography and for a good purpose like this. Mm-hmm. So I thought, for sure, I want in on something like that, you know, where we can share our work and use it for a good cause like that. I found that to be a really, like I said, resonates with me. So I was very glad to hear about that and to have the honor to be a part of that. So I was very grateful for that opportunity. So
I know I donated, and I now have an original Bob St. Cyr print to hang on my wall.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, very important to me, because I also was diagnosed with cancer several years ago now, and lost a kidney because of that. And just was thankful, you know, that the doctors and the medicine and the machines and all that were able to catch it so early. So it saved me a lot of grief, but still, when you tell you that, I can remember, you know, hearing that, and then the first thing I thought of, how long do I have? You know, how much time do I have?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I thought, and then, you know, but thankfully they caught it early enough, and it just cost me a kidney, so.
Yeah.
You know.
You got lots of time left. Look at that.
I hope so. You know, so I'm really, you know, really grateful for every day. Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, I talk to, you know, people in the darkroom group, let's do it now. Let's go out. Let's do an outing. Let's do something. Let's, you know, do some photography or something. I don't want to wait or leave it till some other time, because I don't know if there's some other time. Right. So it really, really, really changes your perspective on time. And maybe I don't take it for granted as much anymore, you know, so. But when I get these films, and I want to try them out, and I want to process them, and I want to, you know, try these different things. And again, coming back to the Frugal Film Project, it's just it just gives you a reason to get out and do something, you know, and do that. And, you know, another nice thing about it is you've been so gracious with your deadlines and your timelines. And I find that's also very, very nice as well. So,
well, life gets busy, and I understand, you know,
it does.
Sometimes it gets away from you, and
mm-hmm.
the last thing anybody wants is more stress. And this is supposed to be fun, not stressful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's the whole idea behind it, right? I mean, if there's strict deadlines, I guess it defeats that purpose, right? So,
yeah,
a very
gracious
host.
I had to have strict deadlines when we had it on the website. Otherwise, there would be dead space and it wouldn't flow.
Right.
And I—that's another thing I hated was, well, make sure your pictures are in by. And then I thought, okay, now I'm starting to nag. I need your picture.
So you must really find the Facebook medium then much better.
Yeah, it is, because then I know that if it's too much for somebody, they can just take a break from it and come back.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And
post at your own pace kind of thing.
Yeah, or they can go shoot everything, and if they don't get around to like processing them, sometimes it's 2 months go up at the same time. I know I'm guilty of doing that.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think another thing too is it shows us that you don't need $3,000 of bing bang whiz to make great images, right? You don't need the expensive gear, camera XYZ and film ABC to make incredible images. You know, I think if you have a heart for it, a passion for it, and you get out there and you do the best you can with what, you know, you're happy with, I think that's also important as well to consider. So I think that's another plus here.
You know, you don't need a $2,000 camera and a $25 roll of film to go out and make the same picture as somebody who's just in love with the craft and gets his cheapo roll out and his camera that he can afford. Now, maybe it is only a $40 camera, but he can make a great image with that.
Absolutely. That's well put, Sherry, well put. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a place where somebody that's just starting out can start and not feel overwhelmed.
Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I know when I first started, I picked up film in 2016. I'm a bit of a latecomer. And I was told this. I was always told this. Shoot Portra 400. You can't go wrong.
Really? Huh.
That's what I was told, you know. And okay. So I went and bought some. It wasn't expensive then. Bought some Portra 400. I didn't like it. I thought, this stuff's ugly. I still think that. I think it's blah. I don't like the color of it.
Do you have a color film that you prefer, that you like?
I actually like the cheap films.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's important. What makes you happy? It's as long as you're enjoying photography and what makes you happy in photography, yeah. So,
you know, I get really great results with Gold 200 and Superior 400.
Uh-huh.
But I don't like Portra 400.
Wow.
You know?
I mean, if you can get the results that you, you know, enjoy without spending the kind of money that it takes to get, like, a Portra 400, then, you know,
why not? What I like isn't going to work for maybe Jake, and it's maybe not going to work for Bob, but it works for Sherry.
Yes, and that's important, you know, and that's what makes it so nice is that everybody is using different tools and different materials, and then we're able to share our results in one place, and then we can see how those results work. We can see a little bit of each person's vision, so it's nice that we have a nice variety of people to see their work and to see the differences.
Go on to the group and I look at everybody's pictures, and there's some really spectacular black and whites, but I know I wouldn't be able to shoot them that good. I have trouble with black and white. I just don't see it. And that's me. But yet other people do a fantastic job, and I like the way it looks, but I don't like mine.
Well, and likewise, there are some incredible color pictures on there. Like I was surprised, you know, I'm not a film snob, but I thought color 200, gold or 200 or whatever. Wow, I saw some really incredible results lately of that film. So it gave me a new appreciation for these lower budget color films.
They're not so lower budget anymore, Bob.
Oh, okay. Really?
Uh-oh. Really?
Okay.
I went into Walmart a couple weeks ago, and they were $16.98 for three rolls of 24.
Wow.
And I went in there last week and they're $23.98 for the same thing.
Wow. Are you able to bulk load C41?
I know in the past, like, Fuji would sell, like, Superior in bulk rolls, but it's not a thing that you can buy, like, for fresh film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never bulk rolled anything in my life.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Bob, you can buy Kodak's color negative cinema films, like 250D, 50D, 500T, that kind of thing in bulk, but you can process that in C41, but there's a remjet that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sherry, you said those are only 24 exposure rolls?
Yeah. Wow. Long live the 24 exposure roll. Please don't be all 36s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But especially if I'm using that for frugal.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the thing with, like Jake was saying with medium format, right? He's limited in what he's doing. And with bulk loading, I can also load different varieties from, like, say, a 12 exposure or a 40 exposure if I want.
Right.
Yeah, which is nice about that. Yeah.
I have an odd bulk that I'm using for frugal. I'm using the Canon T2, which is a really new SLR. And I'm using, way back when, I bought a box of 99 rolls of Kodak disposable 800 film. And it comes in 27 exposure rolls.
Oh.
And it's got the jagged teeth for the disposable cameras, but it's never been loaded.
Oh, okay.
So it can't. I've tried using them in a mechanical camera, and that doesn't go well because rewinding them with those jagged teeth is hard on the camera. But put it into an electrical rewind camera, you're just fine. So, yeah, that's what I'm using.
So you're limited in the cameras that you can use for that film then?
Yeah, anything with anything modern with a electrical rewind, I'm good to go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But don't put it in your Spotmatic. I tried that. I ripped the sprocket holes.
So are you you're a Pentax user primarily? Would you say you like Pentax?
I'm not a snob. I'll use anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got the Canon T2 right now, and I have Nikons, and I have Pentaxes, and
a variety, okay.
I have I need to thin the herd, too. I'm working on it, on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, so, Well, another thing I've got on my list of things to talk about is we did get a voicemail from Billy, and that was our last one. So don't forget to send in those voicemails. Books, camera reviews, film reviews, new processes you love. We'd love to hear your thoughts. It's easy. Record a voice memo on your device and email it to the show at embracethegrandpodcast@gmail.com. And one more item. The Music Feeds the Soul contest. Have you heard about this, Bob?
Not too much. I think I saw a little bit about it on the internet. I don't know a lot about it.
Okay. Well, it's fun and it's easy. Kind of like frugal. Anything can be used to create your version of an album cover. You can use your film camera, your digital camera, an instant camera, your mobile device, in other words, your smartphone, Tintype, Cyanotype, Photoshop, or its equivalent. Just use your imagination. So we've had three entries so far, and you just need to recreate basically any album cover that you want. George from Flaneur on the Streets podcast has got a Andy Warhol cover, and oh, Jake, I've forgotten the other two people. One is Wendy Gunderson has got an Elvis Costello album, and Jack Bulkley has got the Sgt. Pepper's album cover. There I go. I had a brain fart for a minute. But we could use more. And guess what? There's a prize. There's a prize for the winner. So recreate your favorite album cover. And please, not the Beatles White Album or the Metallica Black Album. I'm looking at you, Mario Piper. Think maybe Michael Jackson's Thriller or Saturday Night Fever in your nice white leisure suit. Or anything. Submit your photos to embracethegrainpodcast@gmail.com. They'll be uploaded to the website. You have till the end of February to submit your images. And then your hosts, Sherry and Jake, will pick the winner and announce it on the show. Excuse me. The winner will have their choice of one of these prizes that is supplied by Billy Sanford. Now, Billy says you can only have one of these prizes. So you have to pick one. A B&H gift card for $30 US. An Analog Wonderland for £25. Billy will also pick one or pick three from his personal stash and include a print. Those are the three choices.
Yeah, three rolls of film.
Oh, right. Three rolls of film.
Yep.
Good thing I've got you. I'm not too sharp today, am I?
It's late, right?
It's nice to have a co-host, because then you guys can, help each other out and look at different questions, different perspectives. I find that's quite nice to have, to see.
Yeah, to hear. Don't take me, Bob.
Yeah.
And I can sneeze and cough all over everything.
Oh, I sure hope you feel better soon.
Oh, yeah. It's nothing serious. It'll go away in a few days. But, yeah, that's the three prizes. And we really look forward to seeing a few more entries before the end of the month.
Yeah, hoping at least a couple more people step up and submit.
I threw one up of myself on there, and I look like I'm sleeping, and it's a recreation of Adele, and she looks cute, and I look like I'm asleep. But it was worth a try.
Hey, but at least you participated.
Yes, Jake, where's yours?
I know, I'm really slacking on that.
So now we can tease Bob into sending something in.
Oh boy, what would I do? What would I do?
it can be anything, Bob. Anything.
You just have to think of an album cover. Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah. Just trying to think. Yeah, that's gonna take some time.
Hey, you've got until the end of February.
Okay. Lots of time. Lots of time.
Lots of
oodles of time. Yeah. I really like George's with the Andy Warhol recreation.
Yeah, no, agreed. Yeah, it was cool. It was really neat how he, I guess, took his old Kodachromes and kind of put them together like the Andy Warhol cover. Yeah, that was a really neat take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder if it took a lot of work to do that.
I don't know. You'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
Hey, George, call in and tell us, did that take a lot of work to do that?
There's an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's about all I have on my paper for today. Is there anything else that you would like to add, Bob?
I think you've pretty much covered all those bases pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
Good to go. Okay. Cool. Well, we might as well get our social media stuff out of the way. Where can we find you, Bob?
Well, I'm on Instagram on photo.bob, and photo is spelt with an F, FOTO.bob. And I'm on Facebook as well, just my name, Bob St. Cyr. I'm on there as well. And that's how you can get a hold of me.
Okay. And Jake?
You can find me on Instagram at Jake Rose Photo. And you can also find me on Facebook in the Embrace the Green Photography Podcast Facebook group.
And you can find me on Instagram under Sherry Christensen Photography. That's SHERRYCHRISTENSEN Photography. I know, it's long. And you can also find me on Facebook in the Frugal Film 22 Facebook group. And you can find both of us and everything that's going on with the show on our website, embracethegrain.com. And all of our album recreations will be going up there in the What's Happening tab.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I guess we will see you all in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.
See you later.
Bye. Oh,
guess what? We forgot the tagline.
Oh, crap. Hey.
Jake, you're falling asleep on me.
Hey, you know what? I was starting to.
Oh, no.
You know what? I forgot there was something else I wanted to chat with you guys about, but I just remembered it now. About zines and stuff.
Well, let's do it before we go.
Hey, why not?
Are you sure?
Let's
do it.
Let's wake up, Jake.
Hey, and then we can have a second chance at ending the show. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
So one of the other things that I have been doing towards the end of the year, for the last couple of years, is making a zine, like going over my work for the year and picking a theme and then coming up with a zine. And I think I got that idea by listening to one of your earlier podcasts. I remember you talking about zines, and I wasn't quite sure what that was, so I looked into it a little more. And it's kind of like, I guess it's more of a personalized magazine, but we call it a zine, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
I think zine is just kind of like a shortened magazine, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever considered a zine for the Frugal Film or anything like that?
We did do it the first year, and it turned out to be more of a full magazine.
Ah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was big. It was like 272 pages.
Ooh,
oh, wow.
Huge.
Yes.
Okay.
So we did do one in 2019. I do believe it's still available on the, where did we publish it through? It wasn't through Mixum. Oh, gosh. I really got to think about this. But we did publish it. It was one where you could order just one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been doing mine through Blurb. And they're in the States, but I find the shipping is really costly. You've got to pay for the zine, and then there's the shipping on top of that, really adds to that. So I'm just wondering if you know of any other ways in which to maybe lower cost to make a zine.
I did one for my personal stuff through the local photo lab here.
Okay.
And I did mine as a presentation booklet.
Okay.
Mm. And that you had to order 25 of them.
Okay.
But that reduced the cost quite considerably. Right. And then You still had shipping, but you had to ship them individually yourself.
Got it. Okay.
Whereas on Blurb, I think the person who buys them does it. Correct?
Right. Yeah. Yes. They pay their own shipping. They would buy the magazine and pay their shipping. Yeah. I'm just curious to what other people are doing in that regards.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've had the idea for a zine since probably 2018 or so, but I don't know, just haven't got around to putting that into action yet, Bob.
Yeah, the zine for Frugal is still available. It's on MagCloud.
MagCloud, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just find it's a nice little way to sum up your work, sum up what I've been doing in the year, and it makes it in a nice presentational format. So, you can go and show people a bunch of prints, or you can pull out a zine and show them work that way too. So I just find it's another alternative to showing one's work.
Yeah, nice to get your work printed out instead of looking at it on a screen too.
Yeah, that's right.
I know lots of people have went to Mixum.
Okay.
And I do believe they have a Canadian outlet.
Okay.
I do believe it's in Vancouver even.
Okay.
I could be wrong. And I don't think, now you still have to order like 25 of them or so.
Okay.
And ship them out yourself, but you can also get the smaller size, like 6x6, so they fit in a nice envelope.
Yeah, that's what I did just last year, like late December, is I made a smaller version. The last couple of ones I made were kind of more like a magazine, typical magazine size.
Uh-huh.
But I decided to go with the smaller size this time.
Right. So. Yeah, and that reduces the cost quite a lot. But, yeah, that's the problem. Shipping is, and it's only going up.
Yeah,
you're right.
So, I mean, that's what I find. Like, I want to get more of my work out and share more of my work with different people, but I find that the shipping costs really is a stumbling block in a sense.
I think another thing we offered when we did that zine is we offered for a small fee, you could buy the PDF and print it yourself.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't recommend going and printing it off on your home printer, but maybe using a service such as Blurb or whatever. Because I know in the past when I've taken a course or something and they send you all the PDFs, it's nice to be able to get them put into a booklet.
Yes, yeah.
Definitely.
So you don't lose them, and that's what I've done, so. But that was another option that was offered on there, so.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that's my only experience with it, so it's not very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to contribute to that either, unfortunately.
Well, that's fine. That's okay. It's just one of those things I thought I would, mention, because I do know that that's, some people are doing zines, and that's another way of presenting work, and I was just, wondering what others think of that.
Yeah, I kind of like the little 6x6 zines because they're easy to store in a nice box.
Yeah.
And you can take them out and flip through them. And at one time I liked the big magazines, but they're harder to, they take a little more space. They're harder to flip through because they're such a larger volume.
Right.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. I do like the smaller version now that I can compare the two. I do like the smaller version.
Yeah.
Probably a lot cheaper in the end too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For both the customer and for us publishing them.
Yeah,
that's
for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, should we give this a second go, Jake?
Let's do it.
Okay. So everybody stay positive and
embrace the green.
And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom!